In February 2011, Iraqi demonstrators take part in the Arab Spring. They protest having to live walled up. In the weeks that follow the demonstrations, the government will organize a large-scale communications campaign. The Ministry of Interior takes two busloads of journalists to the areas once held by the insurgents, and now completely walled off. Good morning, sir. Now, would it help you if we remove some parts of the wall? Oh, yes, sir. The wall was very harmful to us, but it also brought you safety. Well, to begin with, yes, but that's all over now. So what would you like then? Leave the wall or take it away? Take it away, please. Where will we put it? Wherever you like. The next morning, it's back to the same area to see if the work is continuing. The crane has disappeared. Just the residents remain, as angry as ever. They never tell the truth. They promised the wall would be gone in a week. Nothing's changed. They say yes, 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 today for sure. And then they come back 2 years later. They built this wall as a barrier between my neighbors and myself. They should take it down and put it on the border with Saudi Arabia. They should have police patrols, not walls. In our brave new world, the differences between military and civilian security technology are becoming blurred. What the army invents to protect its own bases, gated communities adopt for the benefit of individuals.
So when the arm goes down, the teeth come up automatically. That way, if a vehicle tries to ram through the arm, they're going to shred their tires.
Now you have digital zoom while recording the entire area, so you're not losing any video coverage while tracking a person or an automobile that might be coming onto your property.
And present a card, and then this sends the data stream to an access controller, so you can select when someone can get in and when they can get out.
We can put our software, it can be loaded on a smartphone. So if there's a violation at the north gate coming into the gated community, the guard can get an alert on his smartphone with the video clip.
There's like an integration of military materials and civilian materials in terms of security nowadays.
Correct. For residential use, it's just a lighter duty machine, as opposed for things that are built specifically for military or border operations, they have to be much heavier duty.
Thais's mother wants to buy an apartment in this condominium that is even more luxurious than their own. But it's even further from the center of Rio. Regis lives on the other side of the railings, just a few meters away, but has never stepped foot inside.
Do you have any friends inside?
Very few. Well, actually, none. I don't know anyone. But, you know, I don't want to climb the wall that encircles them. I'm not interested in that. I'm just not curious about what it's like inside. I know the kind of person that lives there. My boss, for example. I've never been to his house, but I've got a pretty good idea what it's like. White shirt, yellow tie. Security is very polite. And they don't miss a thing. It's like a labyrinth, a maze. You go in one side and out the other. At least there is an exit. Regis might have said no, but passing the splendid houses every day, he does dream of winning the lottery. Yeah, of course, I'd buy myself a beautiful place. A manor even, with a football pitch, a pool, barbecue. And what about security? I don't know if I'd have any. Maybe a camera. And a pit bull. Compared to the favelas in Rio, The Mireille housing estates are havens of tranquility. Hey, no scooters here. It's no good. There are people who live here. And it's not good for the kids. Go on, guys. All they have in common is the absence of the state. When his neighborhood became dangerous for the public services, Zubir spoke to the housing administration about controlling the rowdier elements. The mediator's method is to be firm, but not unpleasant. And there's a place available until midnight for the kids who have nowhere else to go. In the past, it was the community police that did this kind of work. Jean-Pierre Avrin used to be the head of the Toulouse police. He's now left the national force and is working for the municipal police. He'd set up a community policing project in the housing estates of Mireille. The video is barely 10 years old, but is now almost historic, certainly unusual. Relaxed-looking police in shirt sleeves in Mireille. The police should not be cut off from the people. It won't be effective. The police have to be close to the citizens. It's the only way to make it work. I think the community police I knew was well liked by the residents. They used to call the youngsters by their first names. And instead of fining them something straight away, they'd say, "Oh, if you could move your car, please, that would be great." They spoke to the kids, and the kids would shake their hands. Now, if you shake a policeman's hands, you'd be considered an informer. Nicolas Sarkozy puts an end to community policing when he is the Interior Minister in 2003. He summons Avrin and his men before the cameras to let them know he's not pleased by their results. There are many of you where the delinquents are.
Vous n'êtes pas des travailleurs sociaux.
You're not social workers. The principal mission of the police is to investigate, arrest, and fight criminal behavior. When I look at the statistics of 2001, 2002 are bad enough, but 2001, to humiliate police officers live in front of the cameras, I had never seen anything like that before. For those who were present, for the policemen, those who were involved for 4 years, to tell them like that, it was a disgrace, disloyal. In the 3 years after the disbanding of the community police, the incidence of violent crime increased by 48% in Mireille. And the rioting witnessed throughout France in 2005 ravages the neighborhood. If they venture into Mireille these days, the police come in body armor. The area is tough, and not just for the police. The nurses don't come as often, neither do the firemen, and the ambulances have stopped coming altogether. It sort of became abandoned because they were scared about being ambushed by the youngsters. Not to mention the police. To them, they are the state. So people no longer support the state. Well, let's say they don't trust the state anymore. In the 7 days spent on the estates, we only spotted one police car, and that was a long way off. After saying we could interview them, the Toulouse police changed their minds. In 3 years, the National Police Force has been cut by 11,000. You can't claim that security is a priority if you cut thousands of police jobs. There was a sharp increase in the number of cars burned, physical attacks. The absence of police on the ground, especially in the more difficult zones. As soon as authority is absent, especially the police, it's like nature, which can't stand vacuum. It creates a replacement authority, which may differ depending on the area or circumstances. I was summoned before senior police officers, and they said, "So, what's all this about then? Is it a militia?" Everyone's talking about it. They felt threatened by it. It bothered them, calling us a militia. A militia with no weapons. If you want to call us a militia without weapons. Our weapons are words. That's it, really. It's a small aperitif in the open air. Here we are then. We said we wouldn't make too much noise so as not to be a nuisance. After that, we said, well, you had better leave. Take your bottles and leave. And don't leave bottles lying around here because they get broken and that could cause a lot of damage. The difference is that if a policeman comes to check us, he might smile, but he's stressed. I don't know if he lives out in the countryside and then comes here, but it's better when people who grew up around here and who know what it's all about and who's who, they sort of understand all of that. We're here to stay with them. Sort it out peacefully, quietly, like. We're getting ready, it seems, to allow private security firms to take over some of the work on public property, say, which is a terrible mistake, because all it will do is aggravate the differences between the haves and the haves-not. A two-speed security, in other words. There'll inevitably be one sort of security for the rich and another for the poor, to put it simply. The Rocinha Favela in Rio. The city's prefect is about to inaugurate a brand new health center in the middle of the favela. The drug traffickers are invisible. The prefect has come without an armed escort. We're going to urbanize all the favelas in the city by 2020. All of them. Rocinha will change. There'll be peace. And listen well, I mean peace. The governor will be responsible. Everyone has a right to live and live in good health. Here's the plaque, so applause now. For President Lula's Brazil, the fight against crime means investing in the public services. The people know it, and so do the thugs. The party's over here. At the same time, we need health and education programs, more daycare, more buildings, and to change the urban policies. All that will transform people's lives. Itamar Silvia has lived his entire life in a favela and was one of the first to benefit from state aid. He's a respected intellectual and a man who is angry. In his view, more than public funds will be needed to tear down the walls which separate the rich and the poor in Brazil. The investment we're seeing today in the favelas is only very recent. It's considered dangerous, a place that needs supervision, otherwise we'll all become criminals. What I say, it's not true. If it was true, there would have been a revolution a long time ago. Yes, unfortunately, because that's what we need to happen. In the evening, there's a big party in Rocinha. A new street has been opened. The government has demolished some hovels and built a sort of avenue whose buildings match the acrobatic and multicolored style of the favelas. Another reason to party. The drug traffickers have hung up their weapons and made way for samba. In the background are the condominios, over which night is falling in complete safety. Tell me, wouldn't you be better off in a condominium? Listen, I've been here 50 years and I'm not budging. It's marvelous up here. But you don't want to be safer? Oh, it's very safe here. Anyone can come here and everyone is welcome. No problems.
Speaking of walls, perhaps we can mention more walls which are undermining regional and world peace. The segregation wall built by the Zionist regime of Israel in the West Bank, Palestine. And the recent wall in Hungary, built to keep out asylum seekers trying to reach Europe. And that's it for this week on Aperture. Until next week and another episode of Aperture, goodbye.
Your option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. in the limelight.
South Africa has instituted proceedings against the Israeli regime at the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, over Israel's genocidal onslaught in the Gaza Strip. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. The British government has been charged with double standards after submitting detailed legal arguments to the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, to support claims that Myanmar has committed genocide, but refraining from doing the same in the case of Israel. In late December, South Africa started proceedings against the Israeli regime at the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, over the regime's genocidal war in the Gaza Strip, which has so far massacred tens of thousands of Palestinians. The lawsuit says Israel's actions are genocidal in character because they're intended to bring about the destruction of a substantial part of the Palestinian national, racial, and ethnic group. While Britain made a 21-page declaration of intervention in the case of Myanmar's genocide against the Rohingya ethnic group, jointly with five other countries, it is not supporting South Africa as it prepares to convince the ICJ that Israel is committing genocide against the Palestinian people. According to a recent report by The Guardian, Tayyab Ali, the head of the international law at Bindman's law firm, says the significance of the UK submission on Myanmar lay in showing the importance the UK attaches to adherence to the United Nations Genocide Convention, and in showing the United Kingdom took a wide and not a narrow definition of acts of genocide and the intent to commit genocide. He added, "It would be wholly disingenuous if Britain, 6 weeks after advancing such a significant and broad definition of genocide in the case of Myanmar, now adopts a narrow definition in the case of Israel." The report said, while the United Kingdom's submission on Myanmar highlights the importance of children in assessing a genocide when it comes to Israel, London ignores that nearly 10,000 Palestinian children and babies have been massacred in the Gaza Strip, accounting for about 40% of the fatalities. As Al Jazeera television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. South Africa has instituted proceedings against the Israeli regime at the International Court of Justice over the regime's genocidal onslaught in the Gaza Strip, which has so far massacred tens of thousands of Palestinians. The lawsuit says the acts in question include massacring Palestinians in Gaza, causing them serious bodily harm and mental harm, and inflicting on them conditions of life calculated to bring about their physical destruction. The application said that Israel has engaged in, is engaging in, and risks further engaging in genocidal acts against the Palestinian people in Gaza. Various governments and human rights organizations have denounced the Israeli genocide in Gaza and called for international investigation into it. South Africa has been one of the outspoken critics of the Israeli regime's ongoing war in the Gaza Strip and has led some initiatives to hold Israel accountable for its actions in Gaza. The country's lawmakers recently voted in favor of closing down the Israeli embassy in Pretoria and suspending all diplomatic relations until Israel's onslaught on Gaza has ended. In November, the country referred Israel to the International Criminal Court, the ICC, which is already investigating the occupied Palestinian territories. South Africa has backed the Palestinian cause for statehood in Israeli-occupied territories for decades. likening the plight of Palestinians to those of black majority in South Africa during the repressive apartheid regime. The International Court of Justice, the ICJ, is one of six principal organs of the United Nations and helps settle disputes between states according to international law. The Business Standard has also covered the same story and tells us more. South Africa, in an 84-page lawsuit filed against the Israeli regime at the ICJ on 29th of December, asked the top court to urgently declare that the Tel Aviv regime has breached its responsibilities under international law since 7th of October, when it launched an ongoing war on the densely populated coastal sliver. Pretoria detailed evidence of brutality being perpetrated in the Gaza Strip, making South Africa the first country to file a lawsuit against Israel at the United Nations as top court. Pretoria, amongst other urgent measures, is asking the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, to order that Israel immediately suspend its military operations in and around Gaza. Israel has already rejected South Africa's legal move with disgust, while the United States of America, Tel Aviv's staunch ally and supporter, denounced the submission as meritless, counterproductive, and completely without any basis in fact. More than 3 months into the war, Tel Aviv has failed to achieve its declared objective of eliminating the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas and expulsion of Palestinians from the Gaza Strip. Website Axios has also covered the same story and tells us more. The Israeli Foreign Ministry has ordered its embassies across the globe to make sure that their host countries reject South Africa's genocide case against it at the International Court of Justice, the ICJ. Pretoria addressed the ICJ recently, saying Israel's ongoing attacks on Gaza are genocidal in character, because they are intended to bring about the destruction of a substantial part of the Palestinian population. South Africa wants the International Court of Justice at The Hague to issue an injunction ordering the Israeli regime to suspend its military campaign in the enclave. The cable, which was sent out by the Zionist regime's foreign ministry recently, stressed that Israel's strategic goals are for the ICJ to reject South Africa's request for an injunction, refrain from determining that Israel is committing genocide in Gaza, and acknowledge that the Israeli army actions in the enclave comply with international law. The document, copies of which were seen by the Axios news outlet, read, "A ruling by the court could have significant potential implications that are not only in the legal world, but have practical bilateral, multilateral economic security ramifications." According to the Israeli Foreign Ministry, Israeli diplomats must pressure their counterparts and high-level politicians in host countries to issue immediate and unequivocal public statement along the following lines: to publicly and clearly state that your country rejects the outrageous, absurd, and baseless allegations made against Israel. The cable added, "It's also important for foreign nations to publicly acknowledge that Israel is working to increase the humanitarian aid to the Gaza Strip, as well as to minimize damage to civilians, while acting in self-defense after the 7th of October attack by the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas." It added, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will also send letters to dozens of world leaders relaying a similar message. Countries like Turkey, Jordan, and Malaysia have supported South Africa's case at the ICJ. However, it was rejected by Israel's prime backer, the United States. The U.S. State Department spokesman, Matthew Miller, claimed recently that we're not seeing any acts that constitute genocide in the Gaza Strip.
the wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The United States has launched a new wave of attacks in Yemen. The fresh missile salvo was fired from U.S. Navy ships stationed in the Red Sea and targeted sites that were allegedly prepared to launch attacks. Over a dozen locations were said to have been hit in the strikes. The Yemeni Sabah News Agency reported that the aerial assault hit the provinces of Hodeidah, Taiz, Damar, Al-Baida, and Sada. The aggression was accompanied by the presence of surveillance aircraft over the western part of Yemen.
This aggression will not change anything in the stance of our people and its spiritual obligation in supporting the Palestinian people and the residents of Gaza, as well as the continuous targeting of ships linked to Israel. And this is clear in our continuous operations.
Yemeni armed forces have said that they will not hesitate to target all sources of threat in the Arabian and Red Seas within the country's legitimate right of self-defense. They've also warned that any aggression against Yemen by the U.S. or the U.K. will not go unanswered and unpunished. The Washington designated Ansarullah Movement as a terrorist organization. The Ansarullah Resistance Movement has described the U.S. move to redesignate the movement as a terrorist organization as, quote, a badge of honor.
Designation of the United States, here in Yemen, they don't care about that, but they are honored to have that relisting as a terrorist organization, because we know, and as Sayyid Abdul Malik have said, United States is just the face of the crime. United States is one of the countries that have destroyed, have destruction wherever they go, so we are honored to be designated as terrorist, because as always they say, one man terrorist is another man freedom fighter.
Ansarullah spokesman Mohammed Abdul Salam added that the move also proves the impact of Yemen's anti-Israeli operations in the Red Sea. As part of their support for Palestinians, the Yemeni armed forces and Ansarullah popular resistance movement have, over the past month, targeted several ships owned by the Israeli regime or bound for ports in the occupied territories in the strategic Red Sea after multiple warnings. Earlier in January, the U.S. along with the U.K. attacked Yemen in a theatrical show of support for the Israeli regime.
The issue that America and Britain have joined the war directly and that we are now in direct confrontation with the Americans, British and Israelis does not scare us at all. The aggression towards our country and our people will enhance the development of our military capabilities.
This was a brutal aggression, a violation of our sovereignty. After 10 years of war on the Yemeni people, a siege on land, air, and sea, and to add to that, they are targeting us with a new aggression. This is a new stage of the conflict. What does this reflect? It reflects a violation of sovereignty, further injustice towards people.
Washington and London have supplied money, weapons, and diplomatic cover for the Zionist occupation of Palestine. They are actively promoting genocide, ethnic cleansing, racism, apartheid, cruel dehumanization, and extreme barbarism in occupied Palestine.
It's obvious who is on the side of genocide: Britain, France, Canada, the Netherlands, and others, and Germany, especially. And on the side of right, on the side of morality, is world public opinion. Yemeni government.
The Western hegemonic powers and their Zionist ally have faced the disgraceful defeat in Gaza in the face of the resilience and steadfastness of Hamas and other Palestinian resistance groups. Yemeni military has single-handedly posed the biggest threat to the economic functioning of the Israeli occupation by forcing it out of the Red Sea and further promising to stop the movement of ships to the occupied territories if the aggression against Gaza continues. In response to the Yemeni military's actions, the U.S. formed a so-called multinational coalition in the Red Sea under the guise of protecting international trade, which in reality was an attempt to protect the status quo in regional waters that have traditionally been in the service of Western interests. Yemeni military's efforts have been noted for being highly sophisticated and precise.
The Yemeni attacks have been extraordinarily effective, first of all. Shipping costs are rising, have risen. Insurance for ships is going up. And this will only get worse. So Israel is taking a pretty significant economic hit.
Major shipping companies have had to halt operations in the Red Sea and to take new, longer routes. And the U.S. has been scrambling to pressure the Saudis to avoid a peace deal with Yemen. Yemen's retaliatory strikes has also halted all commercial activities in the port of Eilat and the occupied territories. Yemen has, in fact, set a new equation with global consequences and has pushed the U.S. from a position of dominance to one of defense, having to react and succumb to the resistance demands. The International Court of Justice in The Hague has held this hearing to consider its provisional measures on a lawsuit filed by South Africa against the Israeli genocide in the Gaza Strip. The case sets a precedent as the first at the ICJ relating to the siege on the Gaza Strip, where thousands of people have been killed since October 7. Pretoria accuses Israel of committing genocide in contravention of the 1948 UN Genocide Convention, which both South Africa and the regime are party to. South Africa alleges that the killing of civilians in large numbers, especially children, the expulsion and displacement of Palestinians en masse, and the destruction of their homes, then citing statements by several Israeli officials portraying Palestinians as subhumans.
Israel's conduct violates Articles 2A, 2B, 2C, and 2D of the Convention. The first genocidal act committed by Israel is the mass killing of Palestinians in Gaza, in violation of Article 2A of the Genocide Convention.
It's an application that is split into two sections. One is the intent to commit genocide, and the second bit deals here with the actual acts of genocide. And many of international legal scholars and others have indicated that it's very difficult for Israel to effectively answer to these cases without having to concede that their actions are indeed in violation of the Geneva Convention.
To be collectively punished, all constitute genocide and show proof of intent. Evidence submitted by South Africa says acts and omissions by Israel are genocidal in character because they are intended to bring about the destruction of a substantial part of the Palestinian national, racial, and ethnic group. This refers both to what Israel is actively doing, such as carrying out airstrikes, and what it is failing to do, such as preventing harm to civilians.
Gaza, which is one of the most densely populated places in the world, is home to approximately 2.3 million Palestinians, almost half of them children. For the past 96 days, Israel has subjected Gaza to what has been described as one of the heaviest conventional bombing campaigns in the history of modern warfare. Palestinians in Gaza are being killed by Israeli weaponry and bombs from air, land, and sea.
The suit also lists the blockade on food and the destruction of essential health services for pregnant women and babies as measures by Tel Aviv intended to bring about their destruction as a group. The Organization of Islamic Countries, the Arab League, Iran, Bolivia, Colombia, and Brazil, and a number of other countries have also supported South Africa's decision to file the case against Israel. Iran has urged international bodies and agencies, including the UN Security Council, to adopt immediate and practical steps aimed at complete cessation of Israeli military strikes in Gaza.
For people of my age, we were brought up in the struggle against apartheid in South Africa, and to see them leading the charge against Israel was really poignant. So there's a lot riding on this. Obviously, the lives and well-being of people in Gaza first and foremost, but international law itself is on trial here, and I think the court has to know that.
A separate case is continuing at the International Criminal Court. Both courts are located in The Hague, Netherlands. While the purpose of the ICJ is to resolve conflicts between political regimes, the ICC prosecutes individuals for committing crimes.
This could be a turning point. This could be a moment where the world rises up in one voice and says in very emphatic terms, that is supposed to embody justice and equality and the rule of law, that these actions by Israel amounts to genocide, torture, and something that we have not witnessed, I think, really in the history of mankind.
Under international law, genocide is defined as committing one or more acts with the intention to destroy, in whole or in part, a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group.
There is also the clear pattern of conduct, the targeting of family homes and civilian infrastructure, laying waste to vast areas of Gaza, and the bombing, shelling, and sniping of men, women, and children where they stand, the destruction of the health infrastructure, and lack of access to humanitarian assistance.
The gruesome scenes of death and destruction in Gaza are a reminder that for Israel, violence is not incidental, accidental, or coincidental. It is part and parcel of its colonial policies. For decades, Israel has used disproportionate force and has carried out countless massacres against Palestinian civilians as a form of revenge and punishment. Most of Gaza's 2.3 million people have also been displaced since October 7, with aid agencies warning of famine risk amid mounting hunger. The 365 square kilometer territory.
Israel's conduct has been deliberately calculated to cause widespread hunger, dehydration, and starvation. Israel's campaign has pushed Gazans to the brink of famine. An unprecedented 93% of the population in Gaza is facing crisis levels of hunger, but removing the ability to distribute it through constant
has already been under an Israeli blockade since 2007. Recent UN General Assembly votes show that most of the international community is appalled by Israel's brutalization of Gaza, yet appears unable to act. Throughout the past decades, Israel has controlled the Palestinian territories in part to colonize them through hundreds of illegal settlements on stolen Palestinian lands, in part to hold their population hostage until their leaders accept its political dictates. The Israeli oppression of Palestinians had already witnessed a sharp rise under Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's extremist coalition cabinet, which is composed of far-right Zionist parties that oppose Palestinian statehood and support the expansion of settlements in the occupied lands. Hunger has become the most pressing of the myriad problems facing hundreds of thousands of displaced Gaza Palestinians, with aid trucks able to bring in only a small fraction of what is needed, and distribution uneven due to the chaos of the war. The Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor, a Geneva-based rights group, has found that 71% of people in the Gaza Strip suffer from extreme hunger due to Israel's devastating war on the Palestinian territory and the regime's method of using starvation as a weapon. The group released the figure after it conducted an analytical study of a sample of 1,200 people in Gaza. According to the study's findings, 98% of respondents said that they eat insufficient amounts of food, while 64% of the participants admitted to eating grass, immature food, and expired materials to satiate their hunger.
All 2.2 million people are hungry, meaning that they are in crisis or worse food security situation.
More than 130,000 of Gaza's most vulnerable children, that is newborns up to 2 years of age, are not receiving the critical life-saving breastfeeding or age-appropriate complementary feeding that they absolutely require. So that's our scenario. Without sufficient safe water, food and sanitation that only a humanitarian ceasefire would bring, child deaths due to disease could well surpass those already killed in bombardments.
The study found that the rate of access to water in the Gaza Strip, including drinking, bathing and cleaning water, is 1.5 liters per person per day. This is 15 liters less than the minimum amount of water required for survival at the level required by international standards. Additionally, the study examined the effects of malnutrition and a lack of access to clean drinking water. 66% of the study sample reported having experienced diarrhea, skin rashes, or intestinal diseases in the past month. Even in Rafah, which has a crossing to Egypt through which aid trucks enter, the dearth of food and clean water is so severe, it is causing people to get ill.
The contaminated water is another issue, as the water is not 100% clean, so children and adults suffer from intestinal problems such as vomiting and diarrhea. So I ran out of antidiarrheal medications, Flagyl medicines, which is an intestinal disinfectant, and Silabrin, which is antibiotics for intestinal infections. There's a significant loss of these drugs.
Since the start of its genocide in Gaza, Israel has imposed a comprehensive blockade on the Strip and prevented supplies of food, water, fuel, and other humanitarian necessities from reaching the more than 2.3 million residents of the Strip. Israel's use of starvation as a weapon has intensified since October 7 and has included cutting off all food supplies to Gazans, as well as bombing and destroying the Strip's bakeries, factories, food stores.
We were compelled to come here as there are no bakeries available. The people here who are our friends are baking bread to aid the community. Procuring flour is challenging for us, as a 20-kilogram bag costs around 300 to 400 shekels, which is a substantial amount.
About 577,000, meaning more than 500,000 people, are already in catastrophic levels of hunger, meaning they're essentially starving. That is like one in every four people.
Speeches and statements from Israeli officials promoting a campaign to deliberately block access to necessary resources for the Gaza population as a strategy indicate that Israel has not made these intentions a secret. The Israeli blockade, on top of the genocidal aggression, has plunged Gaza into humanitarian catastrophe, where lack of access to sanitation and safe water has increased the prevalence of waterborne diseases. The Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court says that intentionally starving civilians by, quote, depriving them of objects indispensable to their survival, including willfully impeding relief supplies, is a war crime.
The people in the hospitals, yes, they need everything. They need medical supplies, but what they ask for first is food and water. The very basics, they do not have them. One of my colleagues described people lying on the floor in severe pain, in agony, but they weren't asking for pain relief, they were asking for water.
The plight of Gaza's 2.3 million people has become desperate amid the war. Around 80% of Palestinians living in the Gaza Strip have been displaced by the violence, while efforts to get aid into the territory have struggled. Alarmed humanitarian organizations have been calling for a ceasefire and denouncing the shocking cost of the catastrophic war, which amounts to a collective punishment of the civilian population of Gaza.
We are homeless. We can't go back to our houses. I want to see my children. I want to go back to my husband and to my house. It's unfair. It's so unfair.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
As global outrage continues to simmer over the slaughter of Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip by the settler colonial Zionist regime, it is necessary to look back at the history of Africa, where the first genocide of the 20th century took place. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV noted, though a span of 120 years separates the tragic events across two continents, from Palestine to Namibia, the horror of premeditated genocides evokes unequal pain and suffering for victims. Historians record that in 1904, the Herero and Nama people of Namibia, then known as German Southwest Africa, rose against the German colonizers in their struggle for freedom. The war launched by Germany against Herero and Nama, and the infamous extermination order issued by German General Lothar von Trotha that followed to crush the indigenous population, is considered by most historians to be the first genocide of the 20th century. Within the German borders, every male Herero, armed or unarmed, will be shot to death. I will no longer take in women or children, but will drive them back to their people or have them fired at. These are my words to the Herero people, from the great general of the mighty German Kaiser. Various sources confirm that in the ensuing 4 years, from 1904, tens of thousands of men, women and children were shot, tortured or driven into the Kalahari Desert to starve by German troops. It is against this backdrop that many commentators have been shocked to learn of the German government's decision to back the Benjamin Netanyahu regime over the genocide case brought by South Africa against the child killer regime of Israel at the International Court of Justice recently. Germany has declared that it will oppose South Africa's application by casting its lot behind the Zionist regime. German government spokesperson Stephen Heberscheid said in a statement, German government firmly and explicitly rejects the accusation of genocide that has now been made against Israel before the International Court of Justice. This accusation has no basis whatsoever. He stressed that Germany bears a special responsibility for the Zionist regime due to the Nazi genocide during the Second World War, and said the government will continue to support the fabricated regime of Israel to defend itself against resistance groups. He said, in view of Germany's history, crimes against humanity, and Shoah, the government is particularly committed to the UN Genocide Convention, adding, the German government supports the International Court of Justice in its work. As it has done for many decades, the government intends to intervene as a third party in the main hearing. However, this bizarre move has sparked controversy, and rightly so. President of Namibia, Dr. Hage G. Geingob, issued a strong statement of condemnation rejecting Germany's support of the genocidal intent of the racist Israeli regime against people in Gaza. He reminded Germany that on Namibian soil, it committed the first genocide in which tens of thousands of innocent Namibians died in the most inhumane and brutal conditions, he said. The German government is yet to fully atone for the genocide it committed on the Namibian soil. In his statement, President Geingob criticized Germany's inability to draw lessons from its horrific history in Namibia. He further expressed deep concern with the shocking decision communicated by Germany in which it rejected the morally upright indictment brought forward by South Africa before the International Criminal Court that the Zionist regime is committing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. He noted, worryingly, ignoring the violent deaths of over 23,000 Palestinians in Gaza and various United Nations reports disturbingly highlighting the internal displacement of 85% of civilians in Gaza amid acute shortages of food and essential services, the German government has chosen to defend in the International Criminal Court the genocidal and gruesome acts of Israel against innocent civilians in Gaza and the occupied Palestinian territories. The Namibian leader correctly asserted that Germany cannot morally express commitment to the United Nations Convention Against Genocide, including atonement for the genocide in Namibia, while supporting the equivalent of genocide in Gaza. Many human rights watchdogs have chillingly concluded that the Zionist regime is committing war crimes in Gaza. President Gengob reiterated his call made on December 31st, 2023, that no peace-loving human being can ignore the carnage waged against Palestinians in Gaza. Not surprising, thus, that the Palestinian resistance group Hamas has noted with alarm these developments, which it claims must not be at Palestine's expense. The Gaza-based movement said, "We expected that Germany had learned a lesson from its recent history, as it committed genocide more than once in the last century, the first of which was against the population of Namibia at the beginning of the last century. It is not permissible under any circumstances for Germany to attempt to correct its sins at the expense of our people and by defending the criminals who commit the crime of genocide and ethnic cleansing against our Palestinian people." Both Namibia and Hamas have called on the German government to immediately retract its decision and to stand by the Palestinian victims and their legitimate rights to freedom, independence, and the right to self-determination. So far, Germany and other Zionist allies in the West stand on the wrong side of history.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with a large number of women from across the country. The meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on December 27, 2023, a week before the birth anniversary of Lady Fatimah al-Zahra, peace be upon her. This day is celebrated as Women's Day in Iran. You spoke about sports as well as legal issues concerning women. You spoke about religious art, your concerns about the dangers of cyberspace and artificial intelligence, and the issue of designing plans for the country's elites in different sectors. You also spoke about showing gratitude towards mothers and homemakers, the terrible state of the social media, and also about female doctors and using discretion when treating female hospital patients. All of these matters that were spoken about were correct. We need to hear your criticisms, complaints, and any possible suggestions you may have. It is not my job to attend to these, though. It is the duty of the government officials. But nevertheless, God willing, I will ask our officials to look into these matters, and I am hopeful that they will do this. This meeting is held on the occasion of the upcoming birthday of Siddiqa al-Kubra, Lady Fatimah al-Zahra, peace be upon her. I will say a few words about her, and if time permits, I will briefly speak about some of the things I have made notes on concerning women's issues.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Regarding the Lady of the Worlds and the Lady of the Woman in Paradise, which are terms that have been used to describe Fatimah al-Zahra, peace be upon her, anything that the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him, or the rest of the Imams, peace be upon them, have said about the Honorable Woman are all testaments to the immeasurable greatness of this magnificent woman. In other words, the magnificence of Fatimah al-Zahra, peace be upon her, cannot be compared to any human being except the Prophet's Ahlul Bayt, the household of the Prophet, the messenger of God himself and his children. Her station is truly magnificent. I am going to quote a hadith that you have heard many times. It is a hadith that has been narrated by both the Shia and the Sunnis. The hadith is this: indeed, God is angered when Fatima is angered, and God is pleased when Fatima is pleased.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Thousands of Yemenis have filled the streets of the capital Sana'a and other major cities to slam the US blacklisting of the Ansarullah movement. The protesters also expressed their continuous support for the Yemeni army's operations in the Red Sea and Gulf of Aden.
We came